is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And for this episode, we're going to do a little bit different questions than normal. So these are not emails that we got, but they were questions that came up for Torganized Play. They were on the Torganized Play Discord, and they were asked, and we thought that these would be good to answer in an episode to kind of show different ways. They were asked specifically for Torganized Play, and Mark, being the head honcho at Torganized Play, can give those answers. But we also thought it might be interesting to go what the official, if there is an official answer for them, as well as what our personal takes would be on these as well. So there are six questions, and we will get through them, but we also do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and we will answer your questions as well as comment on any of the comments and etc. So let's just go ahead and dive in. The first question is, does taking the Ritualist, which is a Aurorsch perk, count as getting access to a spell list? Or would the rituals just be added to all lists currently accessible? So, Mark, since this was asked for specifically for how to organize play, so what we'll do it this way. Mark will answer first because these were directed specifically at Torganized Play, and then Jay and I will come in afterwards. So what is Torganized Play's stance on this?
So the Ritualist is under the Spellcraft section of the Rorsch book on page 19. Specifically, it says the caster gains access to the dark rituals starting on page 24. Caster may proceed without one of the listed material components at the cost of suffering a wound. This wound may not be soaked and may only be healed after the act ends. It's in line with the idea of occult magic, and blood has power, and it gives you a specific ability to access the list of dark rituals on page 24. So by definition, that's because it's under Spellcraft, it is giving you an access to a spellcraft list titled Dark Rituals. And note that it does not give you a dark ritual. It gives you the access to the list. Jay, before we came online, Jay was looking at some of the stuff that happened previous, and one of the things that was a point of clarification was that it gives you access. It doesn't actually give you one of the rituals, and so you would have to need then another perk that then tells you you can get access to something, or you can gain spells from the list you have access to get one of those dark rituals. Also note that because this is a list, then if something says you may not have access to any other lists, this counts as having access to a list. So you can't stack up, you know, I don't remember one of the examples we talked about earlier, maybe J.R. Lehman does, but as far as Torganized Play is concerned, yes, this is a spell list. The Ritualist perk gives you access to the Dark Rituals spell list.
Okay, thank you. I'll switch over to Jay, because Jay actually corrected my completely off the wall take that I had.
First blush. So. I remember I had a lot of questions about this when the book came out, actually. So I have answers from Deanna about it, and then there was also answers from past Lehman about it as well.
Younger Lehman.
But in a bearded Lehman. So there was so yes, it is a spell list, technically speaking. Although it is worth noting that you can gain access to dark rituals without taking this perk. Pretty much, well, actually, all of the dark rituals are available in the two normal Aurorsch spell lists. However, it's only about half and half, depending on whether you're an occultist or a twilight mage. If you so you might only have access to half of them. It was also pointed out that the Ritualist perk does not require you to be from Ororsh, where the Twilight Magic and Occultist lists do require you to be from Ororsh. So someone else could take this, and I presume that it would work similarly to the Cursed perks, where you still have access to this even if you're not an Ororsh character, kind of like recalibrated cyberware, things like that. And it gives you that extra bonus too. But as Mark mentioned, it does not actually give you any of them. You would still need to take the, you know, spellcraft, the spellcaster perk or something else that gives you more spells in order to choose some of those. So it was answered 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago.
So, yes, I will agree with my past self and Jay. I have been sick over the last week. I'm recovering, so today's Lehman was not so sharp, and Jay's Google foo or Discord foo was very good and was able to bring up the official stuff that both Deanna had talked about and then I had clarified later. So, yes, it is something that you can choose in addition to Twilight Magic or Occultist to fill in the gap, as well as give you that extra little thing that you can do by taking Wound, or you can just take it to have access. It does not give you any of the Dark Rituals, though. You're going to have to use another means. Basically, it gives you the list that you have access to, but it's not giving you anything from those lists, but it is giving you the little bonus by taking the Wound. So hopefully that explains everything there. So let's move on to the second question. So the second question is about faith perks, and it says the faith perks from Isle grant access to certain lists, as the special faith doesn't seem to be required. Can you take those perks as a follower of, and it shows parentheses, Christ or any other faith, question mark. So basically it's asking, there's various perks, faith perks in Isle, that it don't necessarily say they directly that they need to be Isle as those requisites, and it's asking if something similar you would be able to take those or not. So, Mark, what is the Torgonized play ruling?
Well, I was going to, in our conversations beforehand, Liam, and I was like, you read this, but I was like, I can't since you put me on point. So on page 42 of the Isle book, under the heading Miracles list, we have the following. The miracles lists presented here are specifically for the five listed deities, Dunad, Korbaal, Rock, Elmir, and Shali. Other deities of the same vein may have different miracles lists at the GM's discretion. And then it goes on with all of the lists, and it says, Exemplars of Light, Dunad. Exemplars of Darkness, Korbaal. Yonders, Rock. Mysterians, Elmir. And Theomagicians, Shali. Okay, so you have those specific lists tied to those specific deities. And if you want to extrapolate out what faith is something that you have in a deity of some kind, and Isle has a pantheistic view of its deities, which is fine. So my initial response is no, you're a follower. In this case, as the way that the question is phrased, you're a follower of Christ. You're not a follower of Dunad. You're not a follower of Korbaal, etc. The caveat, as Jay rightly pointed out, is that I don't want to steal your thunder, Jay. So I'm going to add the statement that it depends to a degree that if something like, let's say you were a core earth follower of Christ and you transform, well, now we're into a one-off corner case that we would have to have that conversation. And if that comes up in gameplay, we can absolutely have that conversation. But as it stands now, my answer is no.
So, Jay, what were your thoughts on this question?
My thoughts were a very, it depends. So it depends on the situation that brought you here, and it depends on what the player is attempting, because a lot of these questions can be asked kind of like in isolation, but how they're all being stitched together is often very important. So if you just look at it rules as written, it just says you need to have one or more adds in faith and no other perk that grants access to miracles, with the exception of miracles itself. So in theory, almost anyone could take Exemplar of Darkness or Exemplar of Light. It also mentions, like, technically I could take Exemplar of Light and have Darkness perks, right? But I don't think people would probably allow that. The one important thing, though, that I found in the core book is it talks about the miracle lists are just examples, and the GM and the player can come together and discuss, you know, maybe doing something a little bit different. And that's actually something going on in my campaign right now, because I have a character who is a Exemplar of Darkness, but doesn't want to actually worship Khor Baal. So we're kind of going through and like finding some other god of darkness for her to worship. But we haven't actually really even started with that, but it's kind of a similar situation. Now, when you make it something from a different reality, though, things get sticky, and the whole faith skill and miracle lists have been sticky since the very beginning. And we can thank the Cyber Papacy for doing this, because at the very beginning, it was said if you transform, you can still keep your faith, so that normal Catholics that transformed to Cyber Papacy didn't automatically become Cyber Catholics. And this has had like a ripple effect throughout the entire game. And I've had players try to cheese some stuff with neo-paganism elves who, you know, happened to transform to the Cyber Papacy to get the neo-paganism. That was a different one, but get white witchcraft, I think it was. Get the combo is what they were doing. So it kind of depends on how it's all going down. If the faith list is completely incompatible with their new reality, it might be something that you as a GM have to just say no, you can't do it, because it's, you know, it just doesn't work. So sometimes you just have to say that. In this example, it's true. They don't actually specify which faith, but I would personally see a version where if someone transformed, or even an Eilish character that listened to missionaries, maybe, but very unlikely, converted to Christianity of some kind, I could see that being treated as an Exemplar of Light. But the player would basically need to have a backstory that made me weep with joy to do this. So it depends, leaning on no, but I am open to be surprised.
So yeah, I will say that there are some of these faith perks in Isle that specify something that would make other realities just pretty much, except for those weird transformation cases, would make them off limits. Like Mysterion requires you to be an elf, which means you would be an Isle. Yonder requires you to have at least a outsider perk, which is also an Isle perk. So those are ones that would kind of be off limits, unless you had those weird transformation things that happen that I would require them to happen in game. I wouldn't allow them to just be a character backstory. I'm all for fun transformations and cool mixes of stuff if it happens in play. I'm more wary of it when a starting character is like, yeah, I want to come in as an elf who transformed into Tharkold and picked up this thing, and then transformed into Pan Pacifica and picked up this other thing. I'd like to see that in actual game, by happenstance, not by some flowchart to get the best combination of things. Again, as Mark said and read out, and it was in the core book also, they both basically say similar things, is that the game master and or the game master alone or the game master and the player can work something out to say, yes, you could say be an exemplar of light with somebody besides Dunad, or exemplar of darkness beside somebody for core ball. I might take it a little bit further in a personal game, and if somebody wanted to be an exemplar of light and they're from a different reality, but they're like trying to be a core earth paladin or, you know, something, or a cyber papal Templar, you know, and they kind of are they want to show the goodness and the light. I might have it where that is a theoretical list. So sure, take the perk, but you don't get full access to this list. It's a potential list. And kind of going back to classic Torg, where the miracle workers who invoked miracles, they could see miracles being cast by somebody from a different faith, and then they could think to themselves, oh, that guy did it with that deity. My deity is just as good as better, so I should be able to do that. So I might say you're going to have to wait until you see somebody else invoke that miracle, and now you can have access, because before you didn't think about it. It's not like in your holy book or your scriptures or your prophecies or whatever your faith is based off of. You just don't understand that that is a possibility until you see it, and then all of a sudden, boom, okay, and now you can have access to it. You know, depending on what it is, and some of the more not just everything, like healing and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I would look at it, is look at the individual perks, because some of them are pretty much not going to allow it to happen to begin with. And second, this is going to be something that the game master is involved in. And third, if the game master wants to swap out things, if they're just like, no, this or these miracles from this list just will not work, we're going to replace those with these other ones, something like that. That's just going to have to be a back and forth, because the game master understands what the campaign is, what the other characters are, and what what may or may not break the story and adventure going on. So it kind of does bleed into the next question, number three, which is
before you jump into that, can I add something real quick?
Sure.
So we're breaking this up into essentially three different categories, and for folks that don't recognize or understand what those three I'm doing Torganized Play, which is the organized group, and so by necessity, my goal is to normalize the rule set across everybody, so that everybody can play with anybody's. They can pick their character up and play with any GM,
right,
and pretty much expect the same product at every table, regardless of where they sit. Right, Jay's representing the home game idea that. And we all represent the idea that it's your own Cosmverse and you get to do it the way you want to. But Jay's really representing that idea in that when Liam and Jay are saying, talk to the game master, they've got latitude in a home game. You can do whatever you want. In Torganized Play, we have this rule set that overarches everything else to keep that normalcy from table to table. And so there are certain things that are going to get done different in Torganized Play than any other home game, because that's just how we have to do it, with like access lists and restricted lists and things of that nature. So, but that makes it its own Torganized Play's own Cosmverse by itself. Mm-hmm. And then Liaman's got the official statement. So if you want to know, this is the official rules statement, then here it is. And then you get to home game wise, do it however you want to do it. And you can take it, oh, I like the way Torganized Play is doing it, or I like the way Jay suggested in his home game, or Liaman's thing, or something completely different. Mm-hmm. But that's why we're breaking it into three here, because each perspective is a little bit different based on the gameplay that's happening.
Right. And having played both in Torganized Play and in Organized Play and other game systems, it is important to have it where all the game masters participating in it, even though it's subjective and you will have your favorite game masters and your less favorite game masters, you want everything to be fair across the board. You don't want somebody with the same characters in the same world handing out eternity shards like Pez dispensers while somebody else is, you know, hoarding them and stuff like that. So you need some type of a rule set that is a little more defined than both the core book or just your house rules. So yes. So moving on to 3, which is very, to me, it was just a extension of 2, which is, do the exemplar perks count as perks from a different religion? And they specifically said for him, Netgear, which is a Nile Empire. So this would be Exemplar of Light, Exemplar of Darkness. Would those count as perks from a different religion? And I think you already said it, but just to clarify or just to reinforce, Mark, what would be the Torgonized play
answer? I mean, the simple answer is Exemplar of Light is Do Not, and Exemplar of Darkness is Korbal, because that's how the Isle book lays it out. The little bit deeper answer is that you are, if you want to be an exemplar of your religion, then be the exemplar of your religion. There's not a perk for that necessarily. Rules is written. It's an exemplar of Do Not. The exemplar of Light is Do Not. Exemplar of Darkness is Korbal.
So, and Jay, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 95% that way. There's like the possibility of like, okay, I'm from the Isle. I'm from Nile. I came to Isle. I transformed. I still believe in the Ennead. And I think of maybe, I guess actually the big thing about this is that the Hemnetjer, the whole thing about the Ennead is that they worship all of the gods. Mm-hmm. So they don't actually specifically worship one in particular. So being an exemplar of a particular god, even if you did the mental gymnastics to make you think that it's a Nile deity involved, still doesn't really work. So even now that I realize that too, no, it doesn't care.
And I do want to say another thing that we talked about before we started recording is that Torg Eternity, unlike Classic Torg, doesn't have you specify what your faith is in. So in Classic Torg, you would say faith, and then there would be parentheses, and then it would say cyberpapacy or catechales or sekelum or whatever in the parentheses. That is not done in Torg Eternity. It is just faith. And then depending on what or who you follow and what reality, that's where you get your spell access to. So the for him net jeer is kind of like, well, if you're Nile, Nile access, not Isle. Nile Empire access, not Isle access. So.
Well, and that goes back to, if you want to do it in your home game, and you want to say Hemnetjers can be exemplars of light or darkness, however you want to do it, sure. Yeah, home game, fine. Right. Torgonized play as a, let's normalize across the board. No.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. And I think this one we have a very short and simplistic answer that is the same for all of us. Is the new psionic powers list for Core Earth in the Wastelander's Guide on the psychic list still lists telekinesis as a valid power. Is this intended or untrue? And from what we've seen, is the PDF and the current PDF and the physical copy are both updated where the psychic anomaly. Yes. Anomaly have minor telekinesis listed and normal telekinesis is no longer on that list. We think that it was in the preview after the Kickstarter and then it was shown to, oh no, this shouldn't be in this list, and then is no. So the minor telekinesis, yes, the current PDF and the current physical books are updated. So then we will go to number five.
Worth noting, though, that the telekinetic anomaly does have full telekinesis, and that is on purpose.
Right. Yes.
Because they can invoke powers beyond, or manifest powers beyond their own axioms.
Correct. Absolutely. So number five is the psionic knife power, which is a psychic power that is from the Psi Ninja Backer archetype. So just to give a history or clarification of where this is coming from, it's the psionic knife power gets added to the Pan Pacifica and Tharkold psionic lists as both cosms do have two lists. I believe for the Tharkold Way and Pan Pacifico Mutant, is that meant, or does it get added to both lists for each cosm? So basically this is saying, asking specifically about Torgonized Play. In Torgonized Play, there is a document that says that this power gets added to the lists for Tharkold and Pan Pacifica. Does that mean both... And Tharkold itself and Pan Pacifica each have two lists. Is this just a one list for both, or it's on all lists? So basically four lists, two for Tharkold and two for Pan Pacifica. So, Mark.
The 1-4 appendix document reads, Psychic Knife, Pan Pacifica, this power is added to the psionics lists, plural, from the Pan Pacifica and Tharkold books. Four lists.
Jay, do you have any thoughts about the psionic knife power? What lists you might add it to, if any?
Normally, I only like allowing archetype powers for that specific archetype. I could be argued into allowing it for the Way. I don't think I would allow it for the Institute. And then as far as Pan Pacifica, because it is actually a Pan Pacifica power, again, I might, it would really depend. Like, I would have to see what you were doing. So for me, it's definitely a check with your GM, but I probably wouldn't give it to all of the lists. I would be more careful about which ones I give it to.
And as for kind of the quote-unquote official answer for these archetype, whether they're perks or psionic powers or spells or miracles, etc., they're basically tied to that archetype. If you're not playing that archetype officially, we're not adding this to any lists. But if we're not the RP police, so I'm not going to show up at your game tossing your table to the side if you put it on your lists. And then let's go on to question six, which is, it says do Akasha, but I guess this means does an Akashan Storm Knight get access to the optional two powers perk until a specific perk is released, or only the Psionics one power expansion option? So to clarify what this is talking about, when Torg Eternity, just the core rules came out, the various powers such as Spellcaster, Miracles, and Psionics, they would say you get access to a list and X many powers from the list. You take this perk again and you get one power added from a list that you have. And then when Living Land came out, and with each source book, they normally would have a secondary list that gave you access to more choices. And then you would usually get a couple of things from that list, or a neat little bonus in one of the miracles, psionic powers, or spells from the list. So on the Torg FAQ, it said if your source book hasn't come out yet, the second time you get, say, psionics or spellcasters or miracles, you get to choose two. And then after that, it goes down to one. And then once your source book comes out, then you can adjust based off of the perk from the source book. So since Akasha doesn't have a source book, the question being asked is...
Or a source cosm.
Or a source cosm, true. Does that character, that Akashian character, would they have, if they say get psionics and they get their powers and they got their list and then they took it again, would they get two powers using the FAQ rules, or would they just get one power just using the base core rules because all of the source books have come out for the seven main realities? So how does Torgonized Play handle that?
I'm kind of going to use a cop-out a little bit, because Torgonized Play handles that by, if you want to play an Akashian, you have to have a cert. If you don't have a cert, you can't play an Akashian. So it's kind of a moot point. However, as you were explaining how the whole two-for-one thing kind of came out, it struck me that the whole reason that was done was because it was known that the base cosms are all getting a book. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, we can only publish one at a time or whatever, and there's this list coming out, and if, say, the Living Land has come out, but you haven't gotten to Pan Pacifica yet because Pan Pacifica is way down on the list, right? Here's the way we're going to even that out, because Living Land's been fully fleshed out, and so they got all these cool things they can do, and Pan Pacifica is still up in the air. So here's how Pan Pacifica normalizes with that until Pan Pacifica comes out. Well, Akasha isn't getting a book. As far as I know, there hasn't been a discussion about Akasha getting a book. Now, could that change? It absolutely could, because there's an individual that might be hearing things right now who might think, you know, maybe Akasha should get a book. And you never know. So who knows? But as it stands right now, the intent of that FAQ rule, if you will, was that to normalize until your book comes out. Akasha's not getting a book. I would say, if I got a bit pinned down, one.
So, Jay, what are your thoughts for, like, your games? If somebody either wanted to be an Akashian or went through one of those, I'm not going to specify which one, but there's a certain adventure that has an Akasha reality and gets transformed, and you're like, oh, now I have a Storm Knight. Even though I said, no, you can't be one at the beginning, now they've transformed, and now I have a Storm Knight. What would your ruling be?
Yeah, that's what I was going to start with, was how do you get an occasion Storm Knight in the first place? They're not around. So I would, A, never let anyone just be one, first of all. I feel bad that I have to, I mean, I don't have to. GM can do whatever, but there's peer pressure. Like, I feel bad that the aspirants made it into personally. But so getting into the weird stuff can sometimes be an issue. But as anyone who has played in games that have other realities or even mini cosms or wonders that are slightly different than the base seven, someone will transform at some point. Now, you could, as a GM, make a ruling that because Akasha is a dead cosm, there's not enough to make it stick, and that at the end of the act, they automatically transform back or something like that, so you don't have to worry about all of this. However, personally, if someone transformed like that, I would probably like to go all in with it, and I would totally be fine with letting them take the extra two because the XP costs can get kind of brutal with the fact that they keep getting, you know, more expensive. And if you transformed to become this Akashin, then you probably weren't necessarily planning on this when you were making your character. So things might not be done in an efficient way. Not that like build efficiency is a big thing that you should necessarily always aspire to, but it is possible that you've maybe done stuff that now it would cost so much, and just getting one power each time doesn't feel good. So I would allow it personally.
Yeah. My two ways I'm thinking about this are, one, with the XP cost, they're going to get one more power or spell or miracle. In the scheme, the big scheme of things, that's not a big deal, so why not? The thing that I had talked about is, Jay kind of mentioned it, Akasha is a dying world, and then when you look at other things that have been presented, like Kadandra, they have a psychic list in that. You know, would that apply to them? And my answer would basically be, like, if you're going to do it for one, do it for any of those type of things, whether it be Malagua or Kadandra or Ukon or Akasha or whatever. You could take it as a, yes, let's just be fair and let everybody get that extra. They're not getting an extra list, so giving them one extra spell, miracle, or psionic power is not going to be that bad. Or you could say these realities are hanging by threads. Akasha has, you know, basically been being eaten by the void. Kadandra, along with the other Pan Pacifica conglomerate areas that actually has that reality, is almost like a little reservation that's been pushed off to the side just to keep the Axiom and World Laws in effect in case Pan Pacifica wants to take one of them and use them. But it's not filled with possibility energy. Ukon is a wonder of a dead place. And they're just not as powerful. So if you wanted to go with the whole, it takes possibility energy of your reality, and that's why this perk does. But as Mark said, the whole purpose of this perk originally was a placeholder perk, not a permanent perk. It was a placeholder until you get it. So I'm going to say officially is it's a placeholder perk that no longer has a place because all of the main source books have been released. So you just do it as the core rules says and you get one. But as a game master, I would absolutely allow the two. And who knows if we get into something further about Akasha or Kadandra or Malagua or something in the future of Torg Eternity, then there might be extra lists that give you an extra way to get those. But they're usually not psionics or spellcasters. They're usually, like we talked about earlier, Exemplar of Light, or they're a completely different named perk. So that would be my call on that. So for these six questions, did either of you have any more to that you've thought about maybe as we've been talking, or?
Nope, I'm good.
Sounds no, like, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. So, we have a little bit more time, so one of the things that I was thinking, and in the past we might have discussed this, but sometimes it's good to either re-discuss things, or maybe we've had different thoughts since we discussed things earlier, but we're going to talk about rules versus rulings, and when you're in, especially when you're in the middle of a game, well, and you come across a rule, and for you, it's this way, and for, say, your player, it's another way. You're both reading the same thing. The book's right there. What are kind of the your thoughts? So we'll hit Jay first. We've been hitting Mark the rest of the time. So we'll go back to the normal hit Jay first. Jay's like, I've been doing this first for 70 episodes.
I actually had this come up last night, but I can't remember what it was now. Where like when I was talking about it, and halfway through talking about it with the players, I switched sides on what my decision was. But I'm kind of in a weird situation because normally, for most games, I am, you know, you have like if you feel strongly about this, you have a minute to talk about it. We can discuss it, and then I'm going to make a decision, and that's it. And we might revisit this later after the game. But for this game, and I stand by the right to change my mind later after the game. But for the rest of the session, it will apply equally towards players and enemies, and I'll keep it going. However, a lot of my Torg games was technically playtesting games. So I tried to go by the rules as much as humanly possible. And that really, it does slow things down a lot, but it was done for a reason. So outside of doing playtesting, I would say go for rulings, because you don't want to get bogged down. You lose people's attention, especially nowadays if you're playing remotely. They're probably doing something on the other screen while you're looking something up, and you might lose their attention completely. They might have even wandered off to get a beer or something. Who knows? So as long as your ruling is consistent is the big thing. Don't make a ruling about, okay, of course, anything with Cloak of Darkness can see in the dark. And then if the Orish character takes the Cloak of Darkness corruption perk, well, I guess you better let them see in the dark now, right? So just make sure that it applies both ways. But again, don't be afraid to, after the game, you can discuss it with people. Just try to make a ruling and move on with your life. It's otherwise, it just takes too long.
Mark, your thoughts on rulings in the middle of the game?
So, yeah, we try to know what's contained in the pages of the books. But if you look, if you're on YouTube or watching this as a video, you can see all of the books that have been published over Liam's shoulders behind him. And I have a large drawer of them sitting to my right here, and Jay's got his wherever he's got his, because every time we start talking about this, we're like, here, let me grab this one, and I got to pull this up over here. And you see us every now and then at the bottom of the screen, we're opening something up and whatever, so that we've got it in front of us, because nobody is going to be, I mean, I won't say nobody, because there's always, you know, those gifted individuals that can just flip through it and know everything. A GM cannot know everything in the books. We try to know what we can and what we're familiar with and what we use the most. So every now and then something's going to come up where you go, oh, there's a rule on, I can't remember where the page is, whatever. Oh, I remember that. Okay, so to keep the action moving, one of the jobs of the GM is to make decisions called adjudication between, you know, when a question about how does this work or how does that work come up. And as Jay pointed out, okay, this is how it works here. And that's part of the GM's job. The players need to trust the GM, though, that the GM, this is not, the GM's job is not to come out and kill the players. That's not our job. We quite frequently are rolling dice and cackling mercilessly when things happen that are perceived as bad to the players. And we do portray the bad guys frequently, because that's the, you know, adversaries that the players go up against. But that's not the job of the GM. The GM is to be the cast of characters and to play them accurately, and then to play them authentically to what those characters would be opposing the heroes. And when that comes up, they, you know, naturally they're going to try and kill the players, because that's what bad guys do sometimes. the GM's not doing that. The GM is adjudicating that. And so when the question comes up about what do I do in this situation, or how does this, the player's asked a question, you got to figure it out. As Jay pointed out, you do the best you can with the information you have at hand. You make the decision that keeps play moving, but most importantly, doesn't pull people out away from the game or away, especially with Torg Eternity. Torg Eternity is much more theater of the mind. Whereas with D&D or some of the other tabletop games where you got a bunch of miniatures out there with a 5-foot grid on the table and sometimes three-dimensional terrain and all that stuff laid out there, that's fantastic. You can take a break and walk away and come back and nothing's changed. With Torg Eternity, it's a lot more like watching a movie, and you've immersed yourself into that, and now you're along for the ride in the movie. It's theater of the mind, so the GM paints the picture and lays out, you know, the dripping in the cave and the dank air and the mustiness, and then all of a sudden you hear this low rumble and breathing coming from the dark, and then that puts you into a scene that each person sees on their own. And then somebody says, well, I want to cast this, or I see in the dark, what do I see? And you've got to make this ruling on the fly. Oh, you can't see anything. And the players are like, well, I have this ability that lets me see in the dark. Yeah, but the player doesn't know everything. There might be some magical effect that's up that's nullifying that special ability that they have. But you can't just tell them, oh, well, there's a magic effect you don't know about that's keeping you from seeing. Well, all of a sudden, where's the magic effect coming from? Well, you didn't know that. The character doesn't know that. All the character would know is, normally I can see in the dark, suddenly I can't. So the player, there has to be a level of trust between the players and the GMs that I, as the GM, I'm not out just to kill you. I'm laying this thing out that the joy of discovery, you're going to go through it. Sometimes that joy is painful for your character because you stumble into bad things and now you're standing in fire. Other times it's the joy of look, we found loot and treasure and cool. And it's a lot of fun when you figure things out on your own that you can't do if I, as the GM, just say, yeah, there's a magical thing dampening that power you have. That's why you can't see in the dark. Because now the player is making decisions the character wouldn't make. And then when you have to go pull the book out and you lay the book out and say, well, I know it's here on something. I thought it was page 30, but it's not. And then you start flipping pages. Everybody else is like, oh, okay, hang on. Well, we're just going to wait for him to find it in the book and read it and then figure out what we do. And in my younger day, I have actually had players at the table bring paperback books because myself and another player would devolve into discussions about rules. And they would sit there and read their book while we figured it out. And then once we came to it, and it would take enough time to where you could read a book, you know,
yeah, they're pulling out Robert Jordan.
Oh yeah. No, they absolutely. And we would get to the point where we're like, look, no, this is not constructive. And so we had look, you have to trust me that I'm not going to get it right all the time, but I'm going to proceed as if my decision has been done and correct. And we're all going to play that way until we get done with whatever we're doing. And then maybe later on, when we're not holding the whole table up, we can have a discussion about that ruling and come to an agreement on how we'll do it going forward. But let's not slow the table down. Let's not pull everybody out of the moment and enjoy the game. Cause that's the, nobody likes the rules lawyer who constantly wants to complain about the rule, and nobody likes the DM who's constantly beating you over the head with the rule book. Let's just play the game and trust that I am, as the DM, I'm not trying to kill you, and you as the player aren't trying to just blow the game up with your mad combo. Sorry. I got my soapbox under the table there.
No, I will say, as a game master, probably my worst attribute is if somebody questions a rule. If I 100% know it, I know it. But if there's an inkling of doubt, I unfortunately am one of those who will like stop to look it up real fast. Like, hey, I thought it was this other thing. I just want to, because I should just make a ruling and continue. But more often than not, I just want to do things correctly. Not because I feel like I need to do things by raw, but I feel like I want things to be fair. And I don't want, like, oh, I did this weird way this time, and the next time I did it a different weird way. So the minute, you know, convince me in a minute. I kind of like that, Jay, because sometimes it's the player. We know the players who just want to argue because it benefits them, and they will never bring up an argument that doesn't benefit them. But I'm lucky in the groups that I'm in, for the most part, it's just people think that that's the way that it should, you know, they read it and that's how they read it. And being the line developer, and especially going through year two and looking at all the rules in Torg Eternity that have come over the last 7 or so years, and realizing when things stack, they get wonky, or something I might have remembered from an earlier version gets changed before the release, so I just want to do a double check. So I will stop, and if somebody has it, we'll be like, okay, so you read it, you tell me what you think it is, I read it, you know, I might think it's something different. And very recently, there's been a lot of discussions and things that I've seen in various games, including Torg Eternity, where somebody will just say, it's blatantly obvious. It's obvious this is the way it is. And two people can still read that and both think it's obvious and have two different ways of thinking. There is one perk that I read it and thought I knew what it was, and then was playing it that way for a while, and then I read it again and was like, oh wait, I was doing this wrong. And then somebody else read it, and they even had a third opinion on what it was. So and there are the times though where it does start taking a lot of time, and in those I'm like, okay guys, this is what I'm calling for the night. Once the game is over, for the session is over, I will do my research, and I will come back with an answer before we start the next game. But I do have that fault where I just want to get it so that it's known and I feel like I am game mastering in a way that's fair. I am all for house rules. I have taken game systems before and completely rewritten them for fun on my spare time. And then have given those, and it wasn't even like, here's a list of rule adjustments. It's like, here's a new manuscript that I can't publish because of IP reasons, but I shared around my, you know, we're not using this, you know, official book anymore. We're using my rule set. I have no problems with house rules. I have no problems with, you know, homebrew, but I want that information to the players. I want them to have that information. I completely am against the, I'm going to have all these house rules and I'm only going to state them when they
wait
come
till
up.
You find them.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. You know,
wait till you find them.
You know, it's like Easter eggs, but not the fun type for, you know, the old grognard seeing the Easter eggs. It's the, oh, you came across this rule that you never knew before, but I've changed it because of blah, blah, blah. No, I want the players to have that. And if the players are on a, if the players and my thinking of a rule is not coming together, I want it to. So the, let, you know, discuss it for a minute. We'll come up with a thing and then we'll look at it afterwards deeper. Sounds good, because I have been in cases where kind of looked at the time and is like, okay, like Mark says, I know it was in this book somewhere. And then you get to the page that you think it should be under, but then that references another page, or, you know, like it should be under darkness, like you're using the dark, but it's not, or it's not in the darkness spell, but it's somehow in the race's night vision saying magic darkness doesn't, you know, they can't see through it, you know, something weird like that. So it's not in the place that you think it should logically be in, where I've just gone, okay, everybody take a 10-minute break to get snacks, use the restroom, or, you know, get a soda or beer or whatever. And I need to cull myself down, you know, cut off those and kind of shrink those, because I can get really big. And as Mark says, it's if you're talking about Torg being like movies and something, it's like being right watching the movie and then that stupid ad comes on, or your break at commercial, like right right at the wrong time. You know, it's not at a good ending, a good pause. It's at
these questions never happen when the stakes are low. They only come up when the stakes are high, right?
So but it's one thing as a game master, do think about how this is going to affect players. Especially if it's something little like, oh, can I jump 2 feet or 2.5 feet? And either one is a difficulty of the same thing. That's not going to matter. Who cares? But if it is something where the player characters, say their character's life is on the line, then maybe lean towards the player. Then, you know, it's offing a character because you think a rule is incorrect or something like that. Rulings are needed. Not every situation is going to be able to be accounted for, especially in Torg Eternity, where you have this perk stacking with this perk, stacking with this perk. How many times has unarmed combat and what stacks with what, you know, has been discussed. So you might have to think about certain things like that and make a ruling and then stick with the ruling. That's something that going through the rules for a year or two, I have become very aware of how things are nice and perfect by themselves, but then when you start adding them together, can get hog wild. And then my choices are, do I really want to have 100 examples for this one rule? Or do I just say this rule is simple and then this other rule is simple and just leave it up to the game master to do? And we're not role-playing games. And unless you are specifically playing a video game based off of a role-playing game, role-playing games are not video games. They're not computer programs. You will have to have game master input, as Mark said, adjudication, determining what we're how we're going to get through this situations where the rules either are too ambiguous or the stacking of various rules start getting a little wonky, kind of like a Jenga pile, or when you're building blocks and you start, it starts to tip over. You know, how are you gonna, you're just gonna knock them all down, or are you gonna try to get that last one up there before the game master says, hold on, too much cheese. So hopefully that helped out. Hopefully the questions, we answered those, a lot about miracle psychic abilities, spells, and then the rules and rulings on ways to work around those things, and that we all know that there will be misunderstandings and different views within a game, and just be open, work with your players, and hopefully you will be able to come up with good solutions. So having said that, we thank you very much for watching this episode of the Delphi Council Debriefings. Please email us at torgdcd@gmail.com so we can answer your questions, read your comments, comment on your comments. But other than that, until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.